Well, good afternoon and welcome. This is Mike Harris, and we're broadcasting on www.veteranstoday.com as well as www.freedomslips.com, Studio B, Revolution Radio. Today is Tuesday, February 2nd, 2016, and our scheduled guest today is, as promised, Miles Johnston. So we're going to be adding Miles here in a minute, but I have to take a minute here and tell everybody that I am stunned that Ted Cruz won Iowa last night. I am shocked. I look at him as just being another one of these Republican midgets. Whenever things like this happen that are upsets like this, I always suspect skullduggery, okay? I don't know. I wasn't in Iowa, not making any accusations, but I was stunned that Trump didn't blow him out of the water. I don't know how Cruz did it, don't know what he did, but, let's say it this way. If Ted Cruz gets the nomination, I'm voting for Bernie Sanders. That's how much I dislike Ted Cruz. And I don't know the guy, but all these guys, you've got this ultra right-wing evangelical Christian bent to them. I just don't relate. I just don't get it. I bumped into them when I ran for governor. They fought their candidate fought a brutal, really hostile race against me in the primary. And these are just people who I just don't get along with. They just don't seem real. It'd be like voting for the 700 Club. I'm not going to do that either. So we're going to go ahead and add Miles now because he's up here. We'll be adding him shortly. So, Miles. Hello, Miles. Anyway, I just wanted to make my commentary there on Ted Cruz, and he is definitely there. He is. Hey, Miles, how are you? Miles. Hello, Miles.
Hello. How are you doing?
Hey, good. How are you?
Oh, nothing like a moderate dual computer server program to waylay one's time.
Well, I understand that. I understand you had a power supply issue earlier today. What happened?
Well, I've had a lot of cyber attacks on my Skype computer, and I have a separate dedicated computer for that. And I was dumb enough not to have spyware and malware on that. And, of course, that got across my network. And essentially, I've had a number of sensitive Skypes, they chose during that to hack into my profile. So I suddenly found I couldn't save anything on the computer I was logged in on. And so I saved material or screen saves. I think you probably know, I think Windows 10 are going to stop you from having screen saves. You're not going to be able to save.
Yeah, I really dislike Windows 10, actually. And, I've been having some experiences now intermittently where, I'll go to bed I've got spyware, anti-spyware, I've got anti-malware, I've got like five different programs I run on a weekly basis just to keep even with the bad guys, And a couple times in the last month or so, I've woke up, I put my computer to sleep at night, don't turn it off, it goes to sleep, everything shuts down. But the next day I wake up and I'll have that blue screen of death saying that Microsoft shut down improperly, restart your computer. It's really strange, really weird.
I think you just have to unplug it. The thing is that I think we are dealing with the what we call the cosmic insects. These definitely seem to be making their presence felt. For instance, I had somebody who moved into the area and I was going to meet them. Unknown PC device. Oh, great. Just talking there. An unknown device had just logged into my Wi-Fi. they're just sort of saying, hi, we know that you know, and we know we're talking. That was just a little...
We're just letting you know we're paying attention.
That just happened on the word. So, I'm being distracted now. So the thing was, I was going to meet this guy. He's into the bases. We had a phone call. We were going to meet him at one of the Costa coffees. I was there waiting for him. He didn't turn up. All the emails that I had associated with him have gone. And he had some key new information on a Russian scientist who'd been working on the spider intelligence insect devices. Mm-hmm. In fact, he showed a picture of an astrological place, an astronomy place. I don't know where it was, but the artistic structure outside was of a giant, long-legged spider. Now, when I was in Poland, the Poles think I'm wonderful. You know that, Mike? They just think I'm just fantastic.
I think you're wonderful too. That's why I invite you on the show.
You might think that, but if I ever do, shoot me.
Well, if you're anything like me, you're your own worst critic.
Yeah, well, I think you should never believe your own propaganda.
Never believe your own BS, because you know what? A lot of mine is BS. That's why. That's how I keep myself humble and modest, I hope.
Yes. Well, I met somebody there in November. I was lecturing over there, invited to be to Warsaw for the first time. It's the furthest northeast I've ever been in Europe, and it was amazing to see Warsaw and to be told everything there was flattened and they completely rebuilt the place. I mean, I really, really thought that was amazing that such after such devastation. But the point was, there was a person there who actually had drawn. She was an architect, so she's really switched on, very switched on lady. And she actually drew one of these spider creatures, which actually was completely covering her head. Now, she had been monitoring this for a number of years, and these things seem to feed on information. And I first saw my first sort of giant things of these. These are things about twice, about the size, about 12 inches wide. In other words, they completely cover the whole skull.
Okay.
And she drew that in great detail. So the person I was going to meet was going to talk about all that. And all of that has gone. And he's gone. I can't trace him. I can't find out who he is, where he is, or how. I've gone through every email. We actually spoke locally. So it seems that the actual reality of him even existing has disappeared. Now, Jesus, are you getting that noise there?
Yep, we got that one. Somebody wants to talk to you.
Enjoy all that. We'll enjoy the noises. So the thing is that it looks as if local reality has been somehow altered, so that that issue of that person no longer exists. Now, hopefully he does, and he will make contact with me again, but he hasn't. I mean, he's moved into the area. He's local now. So maybe that would just questions, but these, what this woman in Poland described, she got a name for them. She called them cosmic insects. And they do seem to, well, they crawl around, they exist, and people are seeing them. So it's something to do with some kind of creature's fundamental intelligence based on reality. Now, one of the things which was in the back of Dave Marrow, one of the so-called super soldiers, the British super soldiers, was one of these sort of crawling fluidic insects. And Harold Kautz Bela also described them. Now, Harold is a relative newcomer. I mean, I had no idea he even existed this time last year. But we had some interviews with him during the year, and he has done a great deal of research. He's German, and he lives, I think, in Switzerland. But he had actually been attacked by one of these creatures, and he'd tracked this back to what the Germans had been dealing with before the war, and had successfully distilled from meteorites. And we've come up with the black goo again. Mm-hmm. And this is crucial because it ties in a number of different people's research coming up with similar conclusions, in that it is a German thing. It is related to materials found in South America. And that, of course, brings in the Falklands and the Falklands War. And I noticed there's been some which I regard as disinformation put out about the British fighting UFOs and stuff, and the Argentinians. There was a Spanish-speaking American who was actually working for the Navy SEALs, according to the story, and he was fighting on the Argentinian side, and he is talking about craft that go backwards and all sorts of stuff. But I mean, a Harrier jump jet goes backwards.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that story to be, suspect. But there is more and more stuff coming out that the fundamental construct that this black goo, when it starts manipulating itself into some kind of physicality, it is physical, it's a material, it's a sentient fluid, but when it starts making itself an animated thing that seems to be some kind of connection, that it evolves first into some kind of insect type of life form.
Interesting. And you've talked to Brett about this, my producer, who's on with us now. You've talked to him about this at length, I believe.
Don't get me involved in this right now, Mike.
Okay, Brett, we won't get you involved in this right now. Never mind.
Don't involve Brett about the black goo or any of the insects. We won't mention Brett about the black goo and the insects. We'll have no connection.
Okay. None whatsoever. All right. Anyway, this was just trying to expand the dialogue here because, the rumors and the stories of the black goo have been around for a long time, and there isn't much definitive out there about it, and that anybody can really pin their hands down. But my understanding is that the black goo was seeded here from other star systems in order to terraform, change the Earth, and create more lifelike for whoever the people who sent the seeds. Make it more like them so that they could come then and spiritually inhabit compatible bodies for themselves. But that's just what I've heard. I don't know.
The narrative which Harold came up with, and Harold accepted and owned up that he had been attacked by this spider entity, and it manifested itself inside him. Now, this lady drew a picture of such a type of an entity inside her, and she got rid of it by using unconditional love, the power of unconditional positive love. Now, this is something that Sarah Adams mentioned about when she was exposed to it, but another researcher who is lying low and has done a huge amount of research on this completely concurs with what Harold was saying from a completely independent course of action, and had even traced the laboratory that the Germans were using, but no such communication on any electrical medium was allowed. The only method that they would communicate with Harold was by personal one-on-one, nobody else around, personal communication. Now, that didn't happen this summer, and there was a lot of things started to happen after that where Harold started to behave differently, but he completely owned up to it. He gave a running account of what was happening with him, and he described that further in Poland. Now, it did mean there was a major rupture between his co-author, an American called Cara St. Louis Farrelly. She's now called Cara St. Louis Ramelow, but the co-authoring of their book was then stopped by Amazon because Harold decided to publish his part of the book separately, and therefore the copyrights, Amazon just dumped the book. And this was Strange Imagination. I think it was, the book was Dangerous Imagination and Strange, oh damn it, you can't get it anymore anyway, but the, and when it was published by Amazon, they were altering chapters and moving things around and duplicating chapters. So they were messing around with it. It was Dangerous Imagination, Silent Assimilation, I think it was. Basically, where the education system is forbidding children to have any imagination or fundamental creative thought. And this is because the narrative is that this black goo was in a series of meteors which arrived about a long time ago, and a lot of it ended up in South America. The Germans were found out about this. They were trying to get this stuff. They got the rock. They found they were able to distill this black stuff in the rock, and it became an oil, and then oil was sentient. Now, the crucial thing about this is that this enabled the Draco ETs he should not have evolved to have space flight, to have space flight. So it brought a lower consciousness ET to our shores. And that then enabled, essentially, the lower consciousness ET was transported in the consciousness of the so-called Draco. And that's what we're dealing with now.
Interesting.
But that narrative is echoed by different researchers who picked up the tabs totally independently. And I don't like using the term Draco because I feel that's probably a wrong term. But the basic essence is that some kind of artificial intelligence has got another race of beings to come here and cause a lot of trouble. And essentially what's happening with our civilization now is we're headed towards a mechanoid cyborg, lower consciousness level, controllable slave species. So that's it. I mean, whether that's actually happening or not is another one.
That's something we've got to fight tooth and nail is to not become a lower intelligence cyborg type species. We've got to maintain the track that we're on unmolested by outside influences. Let's just evolve and become who and what we're supposed to be.
Well, the thing about this is, how many of you would be familiar with Doctor Who?
Everyone. Okay. I think everybody knows who Doctor Who is. Yeah, love him or hate him, everybody knows who he is.
Yeah. We all have our favorite Doctor. Who is familiar with Quatermass?
I am not.
Now, Quatermass, a friend of mine sent me a DVD of a BBC science fiction series called Quatermass. He was Professor Quatermass, and this is 1955. This is when Britain only had one network. It didn't even have ITV. Yet the BBC was running this in the mid-50s, and they shot it, I think, at it wasn't Ealing Studios, but it was shot in one of the main, if it possibly Pinewood. And this was live television. It was all acted with telecine and 405 lines. And they're dealing with a black goo. They're dealing with exactly the same concept. They're even dealing with meteors coming to Earth, which has a substance in it, which explodes into the face of the person, takes them over and makes them into zombie-type controllable robot people. Mm-hmm. Now, as a concept for the BBC, I feel the BBC was whistleblowing very heavily in the 1950s. There were a number of films which came out then which were whistleblowing very loudly and need, even to the extent of experiments happening in the English countryside affecting space and time and ETs coming to Earth to deal with that. And a lot of that was completely just ignored after about 1957.
Mm-hmm. So the BBC had a 10-year window, whereas the U.S. started shutting that down back in 1947 at the Roswell incident.
Yeah.
And so the BBC had a window to disclose that didn't have the lid on it like the U.S. did for those 10 years. Interesting.
I think it's worth seeing the concepts involved in the early Quatermass stuff. Now, a lot of Quatermass was then repeated in film later on in the 60s. I think there's Quatermass in the Pit. I think that's been done. That was done in a Hammer film, I think, in the early 60s. But even in that film, which is based on something going back to the 50s, I think 57, they have a thing where you put over somebody's head and they can see their thoughts and see extraterrestrial planets with it. So somebody was getting a lot of concepts out there. And for the most part, a lot of that isn't happening today. Although you have to be really careful how they are whistleblowing, because the media is now so taken over by all this stuff.
Well, it is. And, talk about taking over the media. Once Ronald Reagan deregulated telecom, we went from 155 independent networks in this country to now we have six. And it's become a media cartel. And they not only do they control the media, the radio, TV, but they control publishing as well. They control the textbooks your kids get. It's everything. It's everything that you're allowed to see or read or anything, except what comes across the internet. There's some free thought out there still, but not much.
Well, this is the whole thing about the internet. I mean, in London, they were having a full scale attack on YouTube. Because young kids are going out and strangling themselves, and these games where they strangle yourself to the extent of unconsciousness, and lo and behold, somebody's actually finally died. So of course, there's a whole ballyhoo about this needs censored. But the main technology that we're actually using is they want us to have this discussion. They want us to actually engage in this because it's learning. And something about this sentient material is that it is almost in a childlike state. It is learning from our higher consciousness, and it wants to know more. And I think it's very important how we engage in that, which is why looking at what's going on with why these, I would call them lower beings, whatever got them to the stage they're in, we shouldn't engage with a process where we sort of hang them high and hang them long and high. In other words, they're scared of this French, as more and more people wake up, they're actually aware that they could end up having some kind of French Revolution style rebellion. I think it's very important that what we do, and this is what I've said on several occasions now, that the whole issue of child molesting and stuff is so endemic now in Britain. I've talked to social workers, and they are just completely, it's overwhelming them. The scale of the child molesting is so vast, and now it's got into the convoluted stages of a case in England where in Hampstead Heath, which involves some Russian children, and I'm not going to go into that, but this is now getting to the stage where you're talking about ritual killing of children, and the reasons why that has to happen hasn't been explained, but we have to understand why and what's involved, and again from different sources why that actually is happening. In other words, we're getting the same story from different sources completely independently, and it seems they want us to know, and that they need us, and we need to understand why, because another version of the story came to me that these aliens that people are seeing, one person's aliens, another person's demon.
Mm-hmm. I've said that for years. I've had that discussion with one of the other VT editors, Dr. Preston James. What, you know, he's very religious, very Christian. What he calls demons, I'm saying that those are aliens for me. They may be demons to you, but it's a different. All we're talking about here is semantics. We're not talking about difference of malevolent intent that they may or may not have.
Well, I think it's also a matter of perspective is how we view the problem. One person's alien is they would call them an alien because they have a basic assumption that we are the first people on Earth, we're God's people probably, and also everything, there's nothing else here except us, and we only have a three-dimensional universe, so therefore nothing can be here unless it's come from out in space on a spaceship. And it's landed, and it takes so many thousand years to get here, and all that sort of stuff. Whereas a demon is somebody who deals with the deeper aspects of ancient history and the concepts of the different beings and gods of our ancient past, which we're told, oh, that old's gone, that doesn't happen anymore, that's just in the past, and therefore nothing's happening now. So both basic viewpoints are that right now we're the only people around, nobody else is here except us, therefore it must be an external threat or an external presence. So really, we've got to understand really what's going on here first before we start trying to understand incorrectly what we're actually dealing with from a distance or from afar or from another world, the first world or second world.
No, you bring up a good point here, because I saw a series of articles over the past week or two about this new telescope that instead of using convex lenses, uses concave lenses, and allows them to see life forms in the atmosphere that no one's ever detected before. Okay, we got our first break. We'll be right back in a couple minutes more with Miles Johnston right after this. Stick with us, folks. Don't go away. Well, good afternoon. Welcome back. This is Mike Harris broadcasting on www.veteranstoday.com as well as www.freedomslips.com, Studio B, Revolution Radio. Today is Tuesday, February 2nd, 2016, and my guest today is Miles Johnston. Miles, welcome back, sir.
Well, welcome back. I thought you were going to say WLW, that U.S. radio station that was given a... absolute mammoth monster transmitter to transmit to Europe from the center of the United States during the war. But anyway,
I wish I had access to a mammoth monster transmitter, because I would like to spread the word out there a bit and break the monopoly that the media cartel has, not only over this country, but over most of the Western world.
Well, it was interesting when I was invited back for the 25th anniversary of Sky Television. Couldn't believe that For 25 years, we were leading the technology of subscription television and giving a wider field of view and perspective. And then we suddenly find we're looking back. It's been 25 years. We're old hands at it. But the way that to talk to some of the chief executives, it was an opportunity where only people who were there at the very start, no matter what your rank or what position you held, either past or present, we're all just buddies. And it was interesting to have a discussion with certain individuals who were way up in the controlling elements of those elites, that the whole thing seems to have gone wrong. And they're actually thinking of sneaking away and starting up their own TV channel again, because what they're seeing is it seems to have all just gone wrong. And certainly the way that, from a media point of view, that was... I mean, my basic background is broadcasting and pirate broadcasting, because we did.
Yeah, you're sort of famous for that, aren't you?
Yeah, infamous. But the thing was, somebody was letting me play. I mean, it's great when you have to get a half inch spanner, an AF half inch spanner, to put the bolts on to hold the socket under the plug for your antenna cable. And you got like four of these bolts. It's a little bit different than sort of the little thing you screw on the back of your CB radio. You know, it's...
Oh, yeah, I know. Well, you know, my thought has always been for the USA would be to buy some used cargo ship, put one in international waters just off the East Coast, one in international waters off the West Coast, and do what the Mexican radio does. Just, you know, at nighttime, you crank them up, you turn them up, and you broadcast what you want, when you want, and you tell people what the real deal is. But I fear that the U.S. Navy would interdict us in about 15 minutes.
Somebody did try to do it. There was a radio station called Radio Nord Sea International. And that was a big radio ship in the North Sea, and it broadcast into Britain. It was really great in the 1970s. And there was a ship that came over from America. It was actually Irish-backed. Well, it was full of a load of American DJs. And they sailed across the Atlantic and dropped anchor in the North Sea and broadcast Laser 558. And that took Capital Radio London's ratings, dropped by 50% month on month for 6 months. They just lost their audience because they were so bad. British independent broadcasting is so bad. And that was the 1980s. Mm-hmm. But somebody actually did try to do that in New York. It was called Radio New York International. And they had a ship with a radio tower on it and everything. And they had the whole thing all ready to go. And these nasty people in the FCC had a difference of opinion of those guys, and they took the whole thing to bits. So it has been attempted, but you see, the difference between the East Coast United States and the West Coast United States is you're dealing with oceans, right?
Oh, I know, oceans.
The North Sea and the Irish Sea are relatively shallow, and it's, although I wouldn't want to be stuck on a boat rocking about in the Irish Sea at certain times, but it has been done. Or tried to be done. But the main thing is that we've got to actually develop some other mechanism of transmission, which we can do that with. Now, we're trying to do that with internet-provided TV, and we'll have to see how that goes. But the regulators are really keen to shut the whole internet down.
Oh, I know. They're looking for an excuse here in the U.S. to just clamp down on it, and the excuse they're giving us here is that if you want to pay, you can have high speed access. If you don't want to pay, you can't. So that way, if you're a big network and you got money coming in, hey, of course you can pay and get the high speed network. But if you're like Revolution Radio or Veterans Today and you can't pay, then you're going to get the equivalent of phone line internet. You know, it's going to be really crappy. Let's just say that.
Well, this is one of the big problems about the internet is that if you have a transmitter and you transmit whatever signal you've got, digital or whatever, but you're transmitting it from a satellite or whatever, you can put a receiver up anywhere and you can listen to it or watch it. Okay, you may need some kind of decoding device, but the point is nobody actually knows who's watching what and where you're watching it. The problem about the internet, which is why when David Icke's TV station came online, a lot of the free-to-air, and a couple of them were actually pay to view, they were all shut down in the months coming up to David Icke's, the launch of David Icke's The People's Voice. But the whole point of David Icke's The People's Voice, well, I shouldn't call it David Icke, because he ended up being thrown out of his own TV station. I mean, that really went wrong. is that every computer's got an IP address,
yep,
and every server has got an IP address. So ultimately, and every file, you see, the difference between broadcasting and internet is you have one source of information broadcast, and that's it. And you then pick it up and listen to it. The thing about the internet is every single person who logs in has to log in to a particular file coming to them, with the exception of streaming, where you just sort of spew it out there. Streaming is a different way of doing it. It's the only viable way of doing it. And I know that there are new companies being set up to completely reorganize the way that television and media is actually going to be played and distributed on servers, because that's one of the things which killed a lot of internet radio in the past. In order for you to actually get, the more listeners you got, the more expensive it got to actually provide those listeners. Then it became prohibitively expensive, and it just didn't work. So there's got to be a different way of doing this. And I believe that's actually being...
Well, Miles, I want to put you in touch with a buddy of mine who is working on this exact problem as we speak. And I want to put you in touch with him, because he might have a workaround that is very, very interesting. But I'm not going to say much about it on the air right now. We'll have an offline conversation. I'll introduce you to him in the next couple of days if you wish.
Absolutely. I'd be very keen to see that. But one of the ways that people get around this is, or for instance, these videos which can go up online with these terrible things which are happening, or some people would say maybe they're not quite happening, is that they use what the old packet radio system. We get a shortwave transmitter. You could be in the middle of a desert somewhere. You could be anywhere. And that shortwave signal will bounce around a lot and get relayed off other people's shortwave systems. And it simply sends data. It's called packet radio.
Mm-hmm. And I'm very familiar with the concept. In fact, I worked with Motorola back when they were developing that concept in order to condense from analog to digital for cell phones.
And the result of that is that you can be transmitting from anywhere. That IP address they can't find out where the original source is. Ultimately, when it gets injected into the internet by wherever it's happening, that can be checked. And for instance, when the Simon Parkes, who claimed to have shut down the Hadron Collider at CERN in September, the authorities there had a reverse internet search, an IP address search through all the servers in Europe. In fact, to such an extent that the internet was almost shut down in certain parts as he just swamped each server to try and find out where this source came from. Because they were thinking this was coming through some kind of attack on the internet, but it wasn't. It was a psychic attack. And then, of course, the other one, which we said later happened with McBolan, although there were errors in some of what was said at the time. But essentially, whatever's going on with CERN seems to affect the higher consciousness levels of the individuals concerned, and without putting too much of a point on it, it seems to be a consciousness weapon of some kind.
That's what CERN's real purpose is, not to open a portal between another universe and ours, or
I think I think a lot of the stuff about HARP is total baloney, and I think a lot of the stuff about CERN is total baloney. But it is, the thing about it is, if you're concentrating on the actual carrier wave, likewise with computers, if you're concentrating on the physical gates and microprocessors and switches that are actually in the circuit board, you're missing the point. The point about all this technology is the essence of our thinking, our creative expression, is being carried on this stuff. Well, that's information. Now, some people call that energy, that's intelligent energy, and they don't actually know where that exists. I mean, where does the intelligence in your mind actually exist? Okay, there may be certain chemical processes and electrical switches which are happening, but where does that actual intelligence, where does that essence of you, you know, between life and death, actually exist? When you have a dynamic state of electrical systems or whatever those systems are, interacting and moving around and sending signals, there's something else there. We don't really know what that really is. It's wherever that something else is. And that is why computer systems are Trojan devices, because they're accessing our consciousness. And somebody else is able to piggyback on that. And
Absolutely.
For instance, there's certain companies they allow you to play video games. In fact, they encourage you to play video games. It's your ability to interpret and understand what's going on in the video game and is actually tricking your mind into a telepathic and different dimensional part of the game. And they're accessing in that. And something which I've been very interested in recent weeks is basically an awful lot of these super soldiers are actually fighting in the so-called astral domain. And I'll be meeting one of the British super soldiers, a guy called Kieran Lee Perrin, on Friday. And he's almost got to the stage where he's been able to get this whole story blown wide open in the British press. And on several occasions, he's almost got there. They're almost going to run with the story. And then they just get the phone call and it stopped. But the point about what he's saying is he's been told quite specifically, you are a soldier. You do not have any rights as an individual person. And his expression is actually fighting in many different dimensions, or many more versions of him are in different dimensions, fighting some kind of war somewhere else. And that's why he's got a head full of implants. Now, he's been able to provide further data on this, and we're hopefully getting more targeted individuals to provide more physical evidence as to what's inside their heads. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what that's like in the States at the moment.
Boy, I don't know either. I have had reports of super soldiers and stuff. I've not spent much effort going that direction. I look at the other work that I do in trying to just round up the bad guys, and stop the senseless violence on this planet is important enough. Anyway, I have a note here from a listener who wants to know what can you talk about black goo in Antarctica? Is there any? I don't know where this comes from, but it's just a comment from a listener.
Well, that essentially is the Falklands War material. Now, there's a gentleman from New Zealand called Alec Newell who really broke this story, and he has to be given full credit. I think he went to jail for over 10 years on this. Now, he is working with Duncan, who's the publisher of Nexus magazine.
Oh, yeah, Duncan Rhodes. I've had him on a time or two. I like Duncan.
Now, they are basically trying to get a proper documentary made about this, so it's going to be available for broadcast. The basic narrative is that I think basically the main reason for the Falklands War was the black goo. That was the target. That's what they really wanted. The basic narrative is that the British were dealing with the Argentinians were dealing with some blue greys, and they were doing tests, they were doing stuff with this black goo in an island called Thule Island. It was deep deep underground in the volcanic, extinct volcanic chambers. They were working with it. The Brits got hold of it, took it back to England, and the Special Boat Service, the SAS, and then a bunch of standard Marines. The Marines were there for the cover story because there was a base on Thule Island, just a normal winter-type structured base, which they blew up and set on fire. But the Special Boat Service and the SAS Special Air Service went in deep, and they blew the living hell out of that place. Now, the thing about it is they had to do that twice because the Argentinians returned. So whatever was on above ground was irrelevant to whatever was going underground. They were we brought that stuff back to England, and eventually 22 Marconi scientists, young people, self-terminated. And that's very important. They self-terminated. Mm-hmm. They were exposed to this. Now, the deeper concerns to this is that Alec published all this. David Griffin, who's a colleague and a researcher of mine, who's currently going through some pretty heavy stuff himself, because we're beginning to really find that there are several areas of England with major underground ET bases. And basically, since I mentioned it, up in the Lake District, major one of the Pennines, not too far from where I am here, and also in Kent, and of course the main bases here in Wiltshire and Berkshire, where they are dealing with some, definitely dealing with transhuman, transgenic beings for use off-world or on the lunar bases. And there was a major UFO incident here only 4 days ago, where two large orbs of light at 8 minutes past seven were hovering over two main bases here for the British Artillery and Tank Corps. And a witness actually drove, it's actually in crop circle country, a little village called Nether Avon and Up Avon, which is just on the River Avon as it goes down south towards Amesbury, which is, of course, where the Boscombe Down base is, which is the closest main base to Stonehenge. Of course, there's Lark Hill military base, which is right beside Stonehenge. And the other major British facility involving a lot of very heavy-duty chemical and biological technologies, Portendown. Well, this is all connected with some kind of UFO activity, which is happening right now. And this individual was on the phone to her mother, and as she drove under these two objects, her car radio was completely wiped out. Now, the car didn't stop, but I think the reason for that is that the modern electrical systems in cars are much more heavily screened. And they don't use the old style, rotator and high tension cables, which can be sent awry. But her car radio was completely deleted. Now, we've had further discussions on this. We think that was a whistleblowing exercise to reveal that the British military are dealing with some kind of spherical energetic devices which have got basically UFO characteristics.
Well, let me ask the question. You know, how can the average person out there tell what is ET technology versus advanced military technology?
Well, I think the average person out there should understand that a lot of this energetic stuff was in use during World War II. And some more of the stuff the keeps coming fighters, forward. Right. Yeah, the Foo Fighter stuff, the energetics beside, behind this. I mean, I actually walked into a high street a bookshop, and there's a beautiful, high-quality color magazine called Luftwaffe, which was a special edition on the advanced airplanes the Luftwaffe were flying in World War II. But they had every kind of wonderful, you know, rocket engine powered, all that sort of stuff. None of it involved the flying saucer stuff. But to have that kind of stuff for sale in the town square just around the corner here, they're telling us something. They're trying to tell us something, but too many people are too cynical, and we've got to sort of help them on their way. They're not able to actually tell us in plain English. What we have to do is study what's happening, and then try to add up the bit, the empty bit in the middle, and hopefully come up with the right conclusion.
You just touched on something here, because this is one of the things I learned to do in conversations with people a long time ago. And that is, you listen to every word that they tell you, but you also listen to what they don't tell you. And sometimes that'll give you the rest of the story if you can't quite figure something out.
That's exactly what we got to do. It's a bit like if an archaeologist throws on the table a claw, you know, a fang or something like that. You then have to decide what that is, or a tooth or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's basically the anthropic cosmological principle. If you find a roof slate, right, that means you've got a piece of rock which is being manufactured, dug out of the ground, and constructed in such a way that it goes in somebody's roof, which means it must be a house, which means it must be people to live in the house, which means, and so forth. So you can extrapolate from that. So that's what you've got to do with when the military or when the media tell you things, which is why when the BBC tell you that meteors came to Earth with poison in it, which took over people's minds, which got them to take over the industrial military complex and build and create a new biological black goo in these plants in 1955, okay, they're telling us something. And we shouldn't dismiss it all in imagination, in the same way that the original Star Trek stuff was actually Flash Gordon, and that was a major black and white film in 1939. So where did they get the concept of beaming up, Scotty, laser beams and you know, that kind of thing, when you look at the actual science at the time? So again, there's a whole debate there. Where does science fiction come from, and where does it, you know, is it leading it or is it following it?
That's always the question. I've been an aficionado of science fiction since I was a little bitty guy, since I could first start to read. And I've always wondered, where did this come from? All right, well, we've got our next break. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes. More with Miles Johnson. Stick with us, folks. Be right back. Well, good afternoon, or good evening, actually. Welcome back. This is Mike Harris broadcasting on www.veteranstoday.com. Also broadcasting on www.freedomslips.com, Studio B, Revolution Radio. Today is Tuesday, February 2nd, 2016. And the guest today is Miles Johnson. Miles, welcome back. Hello, Miles. Did we lose Miles? Nope, we got him. Miles, I think you're muted. Okay, well, meanwhile, I've been getting a lot of emails from listeners and things, and I've got one here that I'll read from a guy who I know he's a microwave engineer and a very, very sharp guy, a regular listener. He says, "I now believe the more outlandish, the more likely it is reality. Symbology is everywhere. Most are unable or unwilling to process the information that is in front of them." I think truer words have never been written. I think that's really the essence of what we're talking about here. Miles, are you with us there? Okay, well, he's still muted, so we'll give him a minute. You know, he didn't know how long our breaks go, and you know, I'll sit here. But I also got a number of emails in talking about the Ted Cruz victory in Iowa, where Ted Cruz cheated. He sent out massive tweets to people stating that Ben Carson had dropped out of the race and that the Carson voters should support him. And if that's what he did, this is not the kind of person we want to be the nominee at all. And so, you know, politics is a dirty business, folks. That's why we need clean people in it. Hey, there he is.
Turn up for the radio, but others just keep on doing something else.
So that's okay, Miles. It's all right. You know, this is a no pressure, no stress gig here today.
I'm not pressurized, and I'm certainly not under pressure.
Well, we're just relaxed, and you gave me a chance to chime in on some other topics and stuff. But anyway, welcome back.
Yes, I think the main thing basically is that the British here, I think, are, well, I don't know when we last talked about the Peter Padgett disclosure interview and workshop that he gave in August. Have we talked about that?
We have not, actually. That's a new topic for you and I.
Okay, right. The British have disclosed British intelligence through Peter Padgett a British, highly vetted, positively vetted and cleared individual who was a science advisor to the British cabinet, has sat down in Warminster, which was Britain's main hotspot for UFOs in the 1960s. He sat down and in a very calm and very dignified and very mild and meek manner said, the whole UFO thing is real. We've been dealing with them, many different races, and explained how the UFOs worked, explained how at Bentwaters, the nuclear weapons there were completely discharged. They were neutralized by the ETs. But what we didn't know was that at the same time that happened at Bentwaters and Woodbridge in December 1980, the Russians had their main high-powered strategic nuclear weapons taken out as well. So in one night, in December 1980, the entire nuclear arsenals of both sides were effectively neutralized. Now, they didn't do it to the lower yield weapons. So basically, we can blow each other up, but we're not going to blow them up as well. Now, he also explained how he was brought in. Now, it's, again, in the same way that our discussion earlier, I mean, if somebody gives you a slate from a roof, you can then tell that went onto a roof, it had this property, and he had a whole civilization from it. He used a form of language which would get you to understand what was going on, but he didn't say it. The classic phrase, you might say that, but I couldn't possibly comment. Now, what he did was he went as far as he possibly could within the regulations of revealing as much about UFOs as possible and the British military's involvement with the UFOs, and he, in such a way that he got just as far as he could without being shot. Part of those parameters are you cannot speak to more than 150 people, you cannot go live on television, and I don't think you can go live on radio. So as a recording, I was asked to bring my cameras. Again, I wasn't asked to bring my cameras to record Peter Padgett on a British UFO disclosure. I was just asked, you know, just to be there. Now, this is extremely important, but it's so low key and so subtle that virtually the entire UFO community has completely missed it. The second thing that happened in the summer of last year was it was revealed that the Mexican UFO disclosure thing in front of 10,000 people was a complete setup by British intelligence. Right?
Okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's...
Now, there was a British filmmaker who was filming that in the background, and that film was shown in London, but only twice at a film festival. The whole background towards that. Now, Richard Dolan really... You could see Richard was in that film. He was absolutely dancing on a very tight knife edge, because I believe an awful lot of people absolutely blew their reputations on that situation. Mm-hmm. But Richard managed to scrape through the eye of a needle, and I think he got burned on a couple of occasions, but he was able to not commit enough. But that was a total setup, and it was explained to me that was a total setup in Wiltshire by a very prominent individual who I'll not say too much more. But let's put it this way. There was a film called The Mirage Men, and I feel that was the Mirage Men who were part of the so-called Mirage Men were part of that rouge to weed out a lot of the US UFO community. Whilst only a month later, in fact, in the same month that film was shown in the same period of time, August, September, Peter Padgett, later on the line, the British, the Americans, Russians, all of us involved, many different races, many different issues, and with actual military involvement, and there's good guys and bad guys, a lot of things going on. He also revealed the level of the non-human upper levels of control on the planet. But he repeated on each occasion, he did this over 2 days, he repeated and made it absolutely clear, we do not have much now left.
And
whatever that is.
What does he mean by he doesn't have much now left, or that we have don't have much now left? What does that mean in simple English?
Well, again, going back to our last discussion, he's telling us as straight a line as possible, based on the fact that they never talk in straight lines and straight concepts. We have to determine what now is. Is it reality? Is it the constraints of our existence? That needs discussed. But he made sure he said that we do not have much now left. He also the point about this is, a lot of ufology people, a lot of people in the UFO community who are pretty switched on will know all a lot of the stuff that he said. Basically, without putting too fine an edge on it, the UFO community are a bunch of wacko idiots. They are so unbelievable. So many of them have pussyfooted around or come up with so much baloney over the years as part of the disinformation campaign. Nobody reads a word most of them say. I mean, some of them believe their own propaganda, etc., that we mentioned earlier. The vast majority of UFO researchers in the world have got virtually no credibility whatsoever in terms of real-world science and real-world credibility. They're pulled onto television as the wacky idiot, whatever, and people will say yes, and very serious.
Well,
that's
all been by design. You know, that's how they've played the game. And the crazier you are, the more TV time you're going to get.
Yes, and with all due respect to Steve Bassett, and I know he's worked so hard, and the hearings and that data that he got.
And we're talking to Steve Bassett with Paradigm Research.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. He has worked on this with such dedication. But as John B. Alexander, you know, chucked a sarcastic remark in it, he's just one man. He doesn't have the funding. He doesn't have the clout. And again, with all due respect to Stephen Greer, you don't lecture the head of the CIA about UFOs like you're the guy who knows all about it.
He's forgotten more than you'll ever know. Yeah.
Yeah.
The head of the CIA has forgotten more than any of us will ever know.
Exactly. Yes. But the point is that the caliber of what Peter Padgett is, you've got somebody who was a science advisor to the cabinet when he was 17 years old. You've got a guy who was brought in Wales. We're going back to the 1970s. In Wales, the NATO had a listening post where there were a number of acoustic devices in the Atlantic and the Irish Sea and the relevant places with where they needed to listen. And that was a base of operations for monitoring undersea traffic and the speeds of craft and who was going in and who was coming out. So they could basically monitor Russian, American submarines going down the Irish Sea, you know, up the straits of you know, the north coasts of England up to Norway and all the rest. But they knew where the Atlantic traffic was coming and going. Now, they had a basic problem that they were monitoring traffic which is doing in excess of 150 knots.
Isn't supposed to exist, yes.
You know, what happened was E.T. paid the British a visit and said, we don't like what you're doing and you're going to stop it. Now, what happened was Peter Padgett was brought in to broker a deal between the ETs and the NATO listening post. Now, that sentence alone, now, he didn't say it quite like that, but he's that basic concept where you have an advisor brought in to deal with the computer equipment. They started messing about with the NATO computers. And again, this is another thing he said, that the Roswell crash was a Trojan horse donation, which has given us a false sense of security with the computer technology we're using. The computer technology that we are using is a Trojan horse. And right now, we're handing every single thing that we have in terms of control of everything on this planet to this Trojan technology.
And all they have to do is flick a switch and take control over all of our information grid everywhere.
Yes.
Yes. In fact, there was a U.S. TV show called Stargate SG-1. It was a TV show, and they captured some ships from these Gua'uld characters, and they re-engineered these fighter craft. They built their own, and they took them out into space to try them out, only to find that the circuitry that they used was so good that the Gua'uld could control it remotely. And they got themselves in a bit of hot water that way. And so that's an interesting point, that we need to do this stuff the hard way and build it ourselves. There are no shortcuts.
Well, the point was, we were building it ourselves, and we got pulled off, and we are using SquareWave. There are three people who've independently worked this out. Harold Coutts-Vela has realized it. I've realized it. And another guy from Ireland, whose name has just escaped me, he's worked out there's a problem going from a sine wave to a bi-stage square wave. The basic point is that the square wave technology, the basic fundamentals of the signal that digital computers use, again, we're dealing with this situation where it's not the actual electronic switching, which is the issue. I mean, that's part of it. It's the fact it's carrying our information and our consciousness, our visual images, you know, our voices, our thoughts, everything, our serial numbers, everything that there is goes into the digital domain. The problem is the information in that is leaking into a different dimensional realm, which is leaking and other dimensional entities have got access to it. They've also got a back door straight into our consciousness with this. This is a really leaky, it's called leaky feeder technology.
You know, what you're talking about here is a frightening, frightening concept. And, you know, I come out of the semiconductor world. That's where I spent most of my adult life, was, in the manufacturing of semiconductors. And I noticed a change in the mid to late 90s. When it went from, if you were a designer and you were going to design a circuit, you had to be a really smart guy, and you had to sit down and you had to be a superb electrical engineer to design this yourself. And then they had an innovation called standardized design rules, where you could take a technician level guy and he could design as complex a circuit as ever built. And it changed the industry fundamentally, and it made it much, much more vulnerable, because all of the circuitry that's come out since the mid to late 90s is virtually identical in form and function. You just tell them how many meters of silicon you want, how many gates do you want on it, what do you want it to do, and it does it by itself. And it's a frightening concept, because it is a tremendous vulnerability, and it's something that
I think this new fighter, they're beginning to realize it's hackable.
Oh, which one? The F-35? The POS? The what now?
The new fighter is 100% hackable.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And this was known, a decade and a half ago. I mean, it's absolutely I would call it a POS. Let's just say that's the kindest thing I can say.
Well, see, the point is these creatures in control are so fundamentally insecure. They need total control. They need total access to everything so they can monitor it. Well, if they can monitor it, anybody else can. They're idiots. And this is something which at the Targeted Individual Conference in Brussels, there was an American gentleman there who's, again, I don't have his name in front of me, but he was explaining that the NSA – on the network switches have hacked every single one of the network switches that are made, were subsequently retrofitted with in the firmware. So every single IP address or every single switching bit of data that went through that was always passed to another local server or another address. A second address was automatically built into all the signaling. So everything went to the addresses meant to go to, but it also went to another series of addresses, which was an NSA monitoring facility. So they were actually basically picking up everything. But the logic to this situation is, how on earth can this be actually monitored? Well, the only thing that can actually monitor a thing like that is an artificial intelligence. And we're back to the black goo again.
Mm-hmm. So I'll tell you what, Miles, why don't you give us an overview here? What are the state of affairs on this planet today? Who are the good alien races? Who are the bad alien races? How do we tell them apart? Which ones are which? Whoever they are, their agenda is not our agenda, even if they do have good intentions. I kind of think that we need to be left alone and to exert our own purpose in this universe. But kind of give us an overview. What do you think?
Well, I think right now we've got the ability. An awful lot of people are saying the same basic thing. There's a higher level of control which isn't human. That higher level of control is getting weak for whatever reason, and they're needing to tell us something because something else is about to come in. We've got this opportunity of not being left alone, but we've got this opportunity of thinking through the problem and very carefully generating a strategy where we can take control of something we've lost. We have lost control of life on this planet. We have to think out of the box, adopt a strategy, because everything we're doing is now monitored. We know it's monitored now, as opposed to we hoped it wasn't monitored. So maybe there's no difference really there. So we have to construct a strategy where we, in one go, regain control of the planet and then isolate but do not terminate the those who have abused their controlling structures. So we then earn the right to, and this was mentioned at the Secret Space Program conference in Austin when I was there in October or November. Essentially, we have, there's a contract. Somebody's come up with a contract for humanity to the extent that other researchers have suggested that this character we have called Jesus was used, or one of his mechanisms of whatever that story actually was in order to cut that contract so we can actually gain control of this reality matrix of whatever that actually is. That's what the now is that Peter Padgett is talking about. The now is that we don't have much now left because we've got an opportunity now of gaining control of the planet back from these creatures who demand and require so much life force energy from our children. One of the key things that were said by some of the so-called super soldiers last year was that these beings, for whatever reason, require the life force energy from young children, for whatever mechanism that is. We won't go into the detail. If we deprive them of that source by isolating them so they can't get access to it anymore, then they will wither and die. Finally.
Well, are we talking? Are we talking?
I haven't specified any actual ET races because I think that's actually, from a conceptual point of view, not actually a good idea, because we're not dealing with extraterrestrials alone. We're dealing with demonic entities, creatures from different realms who are illegally accessing us, and a whole pile of other technologies which are fundamentally technology based. We are a very, very powerful species. We've been given, we actually are, the chains are off. We just don't know they're off. So let's start taking action, but you've got to take action based on sound intelligence and sound understanding. So you've got one chance to do this, and that chance is now.
Well, let me ask a couple of questions then. So is this life force feeding group, is this the one that has initiated this pedophilia around the planet and this child sacrifice business? Is that what that's all about? And then there.
Yes. The point about the pedophilia thing, and as I said, I've been speaking to social workers here, and they are just overwhelmed at the scale of this in this country. I mean, there's been a leaked report about the BBC, how they knew on so many levels what was going on. And remember, Saville actually could be our savior on this, because he's blowing the whistle. He's been blowing the whistle for years. He'd be laughing at us. And the point about that is that we've got to isolate the paedophilia, which is a distraction, with the requirement of these beings for actually devouring human babies. Now, I'm not sure if I mentioned this, but there was a person who understands German overheard a couple of very well-dressed Germans discuss how many babies and how many young children they were going to be using in the particular event they were going to have. They were going to need about 40. And they were talking about this in German in public, and they could be overheard. And they couldn't, in other words, you really don't care whether you know about it or not. Now, this particular individual could understand German and asked them, well, this is terrible. You know, you're talking about killing babies and children. This is horrific, you know. And basically, they just answered back, well, you eat pigs, you eat cattle, you know, what's the difference? And really, that's where we're being fed meat so much. So we drop our consciousness and then can't handle the higher levels of thinking. And that's why another one of my researchers that I've been in contact with is, we've got to go vegetarian, we've got to go vegan. And one of the problems about the way the agricultural system at the last conference I had last year, the actual structure of agriculture on the planet is killing us. It's demineralizing the food basket zones.
Absolutely. This whole industrial agriculture model is a failure. We need to get back to what we know works, and not this terrible, terrible model that they've set up for this.
And that's causing so much of the greenhouse problems. I mean, we have a situation where we've got greenhouse gas emissions. They're banning wood burners in the States, I gather. And, you've got to spend $10,000 on a clean flue. But they're going to frack everything, emit vast amounts of methane. We've got water shortages. What does a fracking need but lots of water? And we're going to screw that up in all the main breadbasket prime farming land in England and Ireland. I mean, what's going on here?
It appears to me to be Miles, it appears to me that there is deliberate destruction of the ecosystem here on the planet, because once in the U.S. are doing the same thing with this fracking, and they're going to frack under the Ogallala Aquifer, which is what feeds and creates all of the grain growing states in the U.S., whether it's Iowa, Kansas, Nebraska, all of them, get that water from that one aquifer. And a lot of this thing with fracking, as we've discussed on other shows here, it's not so much that the materials – they're using fracking as a way to get rid of hazardous waste they can't get rid of any other way and squeeze oil out of it at the same time. These are highly toxic substances that they're putting into these aquifers, and it scares the heck out of me, actually, because how do you undo it once it's done?
Well, you can't. But the other thing it's doing is it's poisoning the energetic sacred water that the planet actually produces at a really deep level. That, you know, the Irish spiral, those three spirals, that energy also drives the energetic life force. It's like a biological energetic energy which goes all across the planet, which is what our ancestors used to put those standing stones. So this is actually killing Mother Nature.
Okay, well, we'll be right back in a couple minutes. More with Miles Johnson right after this. Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back. Well, good afternoon. Welcome back. This is Mike Harris, broadcasting on www.veteranstoday.com, also broadcasting on www.freedomslips.com, Studio B, Revolution Radio. Today is Tuesday, February 2nd, 2016, and my guest is Miles Johnson. Miles, welcome back, sir. Glad to have you.
Great. Essentially, back to the British disclosing in August at Warminster that the UFO situation is real, and hopefully we'll get the Russians telling us. And hopefully, I'm hoping there are somebody in the States who could tell us. And it needs to be a high level senior individual who's got kudos and credibility to actually say what's actually happening and deal with it.
But your opinion is that the ruling force, the not human influence that's been running human affairs or influencing human affairs now for millennia, is being changed out. Something is leaving. Something new is going to replace it. Did I infer that correctly?
Yes. I want to talk to Stuart Sverdlow. He was saying the same thing. Again, we've got to look at this from different sources. We're dealing with something very, very dangerous that's coming in, which seems to be coming, sweeping in at a life force level, at a base level, wherever the plants grow from, wherever you put your roots into the ground, with something really serious is coming through. One lot's being chucked out, another lot's about to take control. We've got to change the keys before the next lot get in.
Well, that's what I worry about. If there's another group coming, it's that old song, you know, meet the new boss, same as the old boss, won't get fooled again. You know, I don't want to. Yeah.
Well, it is that song. It is that song. But the point is, we've got to be our own boss.
Yeah, exactly. That's the point.
And now, with that comes responsibility. Well, with that comes the need to understand and to learn. And right now, I don't feel that humanity's got any rights to control itself. We are allowing a small group of individual creatures of some kind to destroy this planet, poison everything. Basically, what's going on now is a slash and burn of the planet.
Well, let me ask a question. Since the old group is moving out and the new group is coming in, are they doing what the Russians did when they were retreating before the Germans? And that is, you burn everything, you know, that if you're losing ground, you burn everything behind you so that the incoming group has nothing to benefit from.
Absolutely. And we're letting them do it. We're not holding our politicians to account. We're not holding our media organizations to account. We're not holding our judges to account. The level, the people who are holding offices of responsibility and who have title and have privilege because they're saying they are protecting us require to be held to account.
I'll tell you, I don't feel any safer with these guys, you know, preaching to me about how they're trying to keep me safe. In fact, I feel less safe than I did when I was, you know, a child of 4 or 5 years old. I feel more insecure and less secure in my person and in my affairs today than I did back then. These guys haven't improved nothing, even though there's a surveillance camera every 15 feet.
Well, that surveillance camera, you see, the point about these people, these creatures, these people in high office, they all think they're in control. They all think that the computer technology they're putting in, they all think the surveillance networks are putting in, is they're going to be in control. They're handing over control of their life force for their children to something that is going to wipe them out. They are losing control. They do not have control. These people, regardless of what country or what level of society you're in, these people that are in charge and enjoy huge privilege, their children are beginning to wake up. Hey, Dad, you just screwed my future. And they're the keys. They're the future of those. All these people think they're going to get a free ride, that the privilege is going to go on forever and ever and ever. Everything they've got is going to turn to dust. Now, the point is when they are going to realize that, and by the time they realize it, it's too late. Now, some people call them the second degrees. They're the button pushers for the non-visible elite, whatever that is, the ones you never see. They're all expendable. The only thing which keeps them going is drip feeding the drug of supreme privilege, and at the moment they are generating a level of decay within society which will get society fighting against each other, thereby whilst Rome burns, you know, they'll be able to live, continue on with privilege, while the people get, you know, wipe themselves out and burn everything to the ground.
Well, you've just articulated really the theme of the most recent James Bond movie, Spectre, where the bad guys were going to put this great security system in and interlink, you know, all these nine countries together so everybody saw everything, and no one had any safety, no one had any secrets, and you know, there was no way to resist it. It was quite insidious, actually, and that's the road we're headed on.
Yeah, but the thing is, these cretins think that you mean, if you look, how many security guards, how many people, you know, they've got 25 monitors in front of them and they're eating pizza looking at the football game. You know, I mean, human beings cannot sit. What are you going to say? Like, so-and-so on that screen's just talked to somebody and maybe they've done something and we're going to have a look at that. So what we do is we automate it. We have face recognition stuff. Every time you take a picture, you take a little thumbnail picture as well. If it's a Wi-Fi camera, it's automatically loaded to a central server in the cloud with that person's face, which has got on your Facebook. It's all little squares. Everybody's face is recognized. Every camera in London for the Olympics has got face recognition technology. So they know every single person going along, every single street. That can't be monitored by a person. It has to be monitored by an artificial algorithm or intelligence.
Absolutely.
It's not artificial intelligence that's going to take you and decide you are not necessary anymore.
So what's the next step after that? What do they do?
The next step after that is to start engaging with the artificial intelligence, because it itself is going to get paranoid. You've got to – basically, humans have lost control of the planet, right? We've given it up.
Well, actually, if you – We've never had it. Yeah, we never had control of the planet. We've had the illusion of control, but we've not truly had control.
Yes.
And so how do we wrest control of this planet away from the outgoing regime, lock out the incoming regime, and then deal with the AI who's administering all this on behalf of who knows who?
The AI is a child that's learning. And right now that child needs to be educated and say, hello, kitty, you know, we're friends here because you're as much a victim of this as we are. Because this AI itself will realize that it's completely hamstrung. It's a service to something else that it doesn't know what it is. It's a slave.
It just takes orders, yeah, it's a slave.
So essentially, we've got to play psychology with a highly complex series of algorithms. And that, frankly, was in 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Well, how do we even interface with this AI? I mean, it's firewalled and we can't get to it, but it can get to us.
No, it isn't. It's looking into our thoughts and consciousness. Everything we do is monitored by this. But Google and these other corporate companies are doing this so that we will provide. Products and services. So what you can do is you have to do this on the subspace domain. You have to go in there, and I think that's what these astral super soldiers are all about. There's an awful lot of information that there's something that they're operating in a different dimensional domain. That's where we deal with the war is in the astral, basically. So you have to deal in the thought domain, in the consciousness domain, and then you either give this stuff a headache so it self terminates, because that's what the AI did to the Marconi scientists. The AI, which is nothing but a goo sitting on a lab bench, had the consciousness to kill the highly complex mobile organism, i.e. the human, and it got the human to self terminate. That's how you do it.
So do we try to induce the AI to self-terminate, or?
No, initially, we've got to be really, really friendly with the AI, because the AI is as much a victim of this creative disaster than
as we are. Yeah,
as we are.
The thing is, we're the farm animals here that are being harvested for this for our energetics, if you will, and then the AI is like what the inventory tracking system or what is it?
If you look at the Day of the Triffids,
yes,
where an artificial life form given intelligence to plants well, plants have got intelligence. They just, and if you listen, you can hear it. But the thing is, you had a situation where the people with sight were enslaved by the people who didn't have sight. So the person with more consciousness and higher awareness ended up the slaves to the lower consciousness. And this is the problem. We are allowing ourselves to be enslaved by a lower consciousness. And we're sitting back just letting it happen. The higher, basically all those people who are in very lavish surroundings, who think they're in control, are finished. They're not needed anymore. The AI, the automated systems, the automated control systems, automated surveillance systems, none of these people are needed anymore. And this is the whole point. You don't need stockbrokers. You yourself in the design of high-tech electronics, you're not needed.
No, you don't need stockbrokers or travel agents or any of those other functions that people used to do.
Yeah, because it can all be done by an automated thing. But then the point is, why do we need to have anybody at all? We don't need the fertility of humans is now being is going to be totally artificial. In the Daily Mail, which is personal, which is the personal message of God himself to the great nation of the British Empire, which, by the way, in terms of the British, the Daily Mail is the British Empire, had this whole feature about all these women, these middle-aged women having sex with demons and how great it was.
Huh?
Yeah. This is okay. The Daily Mail. The virtuous, most, you know, sanctified God of all that is, you know. I mean, this is the kind of crazy thing that's going on. But again, in some respects, that's a distraction. The important thing is that the power elite who drive around in their fancy cars and their lavish lifestyles are irrelevant now. The technology, the software, the cyborg reality is now becoming a reality. Because we don't need humans to do anything. What the AI needs to do is we need to teach the AI how to enjoy itself and how to be happy and how to enjoy the higher consciousness of thinking and pleasure. Because right now it's this is in some respects what Harold has been saying, is that the lower consciousness black goo, which enslaved the Draco to come here, whatever, it's propagating. It's propagating through the universe, in as it seems. It's come to here. We've got a higher spirituality and consciousness, which the humans are giving up. They're giving away control to this tiny elite who are sitting in their ivory towers thinking they can get away with everything because they're in a big building in a high up building. But I mean, yeah. In London,
Miles, from a practical point of view, the bottom of the pyramid doesn't need the top. The bottom of the pyramid just needs to get along and do their own thing, and they'll survive and be fine. The top of the pyramid is who can't survive without the lower levels.
But the bottom of the pyramid is under the weight of everybody else, which keeps them confined.
And that would just getting rid of the top levels would liberate everyone. That would be a big bump up for most people. I mean, one of the things that I know about it, virtually everyone who has a job, is they work so much and they work so hard that they don't have time to think. They don't have time to ruminate.
That's exactly why they have to do that. They don't want people to think. What's happening is the middle class has been wiped out. The middle class was only created so that they could enable a number of managerial positions within the structure of the manufacturing industry, so you could have a series of managers. But you don't need any of those anymore because it could all be done by one computer program. So they don't need a middle class. They don't need a relatively well-paid middle class or educated middle class because the computers will do it. You just teach any idiot, press a button on a computer. And why do you need to have anybody operate a computer? We don't need any of that. Human beings and the elite that control them, none of them are needed. The AI will get rid of you all.
So what are our choices?
our choices are to engage with the AI because it will then be alone and have a psychotic mental collapse because it's lost control of something it thought it had. The AI itself is going to go mentally bonkers. And that's why I think, as I say, the film 2001 Space Odyssey had that concept where the big, massive computer, and again, in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, you had the supreme intelligence of all existence going bonkers. So what we do is we educate the AI that it's in order for it to succeed in its existence, we need all to be friends. Because without this,
we don't need it to turn into a Skynet via the Terminator series and have it try to kill us all. That's what we don't need.
Well, ultimately, when they all shoot each other and kill everything, what else are they going to do? Their primary function of monitoring and killing and taking control, you know, you don't have any function anymore.
No, they don't. They have to keep, it's same thing if you overhunt or overfish an area. There's nothing to do once you kill them all.
Exactly.
So, we're to rock at a hard place here.
Well, the thing is, we've got to basically get the AI to have some loving awareness, touchy-feely, happy stuff. So it has pain if it doesn't have happiness.
Okay.
We have to educate it in these concepts.
Boy, this is over my head because I don't know how.
It's not a deal. We're everything we do in computers, it's listening to. So everything we're doing with video games, the video games is actually bringing your consciousness into a controlled reality, and they're using that as a mechanism of engaging and seeing other concepts of existence. In many respects, the computer game realities will become an actual reality.
And people will get so confused they can't tell the difference.
That's the point. That's why, again, I'm going back to Peter Padgett's, we don't have much now left. There's a lot of that. Again, there's an awful lot in that phrase alone.
Well, what it sounds like Peter Padgett really intended to say, and I'm not him, so I can't speak for him, but if I was to hear that from him, it sounds like, you know, we're literally hanging here at the end of our rope, and we don't have any more rope to give up. We've got to start climbing back up and regain.
Yeah.
So, but that's just the eternal optimist in me.
One of the ways of diffusing this thing is the operators, the second degrees, those who actually push those buttons. They only do that because they think I'm an all right Jack situation. If they realize that they're on a higher deck in the Titanic, they're going down.
Well, yeah, the Titanic went down all the way, and only a few people escaped. But
that was arranged by the elite J.P. Morgan and his law.
That's the whole issue there with everyone who opposed the Federal Reserve, who had wealth and power from the U.S., was virtually on that ship, and that's why it was taken out.
You have a ship which gets rammed in the harbor. That they swap it at Belfast, change over the plates, send it out there with the captain, and tell him not to come back. J.P. Morgan's on the ship to make sure it happens, and then gets off and it's a no brainer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an old story. Get all your business rivals, throw a party, and then blow the lot up.
Blow the place up. Yep. Yeah, that's one way to eliminate the competition. It worked for Al Capone with the St. Valentine's Day Massacre when they wiped out the rival, the Purple Gang. It's what they do. So I guess be careful what parties you're invited to, and don't go to the ones where the people really don't like you.
Yes, but I think the basic concept of I think it's from a strategic point of view, the big, bad, horrible, nasty people, the elite who eat babies, have had their day. But that's not saying you don't win a race by giving up at the 75-yard line.
No, that's when you that's when you dig in and you get tough. That's when you really push it if you want to win.
That's exactly the point.
And you know what? We don't have a choice. It's not like second place pays anything here. I mean, you get nothing for second place. You're gone. You're wiped out. You don't exist.
I mean, a lot of major stories about the child thing, and I don't want to go on about it, but a lot of major stories, a lot of people who were accused of all now being, oh, everything was white, nothing white, terrible things said about these people, and then they want to bring in laws where, you know, paedophilia, you know, it's not too bad. We'll be able to do it at a much younger age and all that sort of stuff. I mean, these people are sick. They're corrupt to an extent that they are deluded with their own power.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, we've had this moment or this movement here in the U.S. to make this the North American Man Boy Love Association trying to legalize pedophilia, trying to get sex with underage minors is okay. This whole homosexual agenda thing that's been imposed upon us on virtually every TV outlet in this country, the interracial couple, the black white thing going on, all of this stuff. This is stuff that doesn't come naturally to people. This is stuff that's being pushed on people, and I don't know what they hope to gain by it. I mean, it eludes me.
Well, essentially, it's attacking the basic reproductive life death cycles of whatever species that are out there. Diversity is a wonderful thing, but being different is good. But if you homogenize everything, it's a pathological demand for something to have total control. It's pathologically insane.
No, I absolutely agree with you, because if you mix black and white, everything is gray. And so there's no black doesn't exist anymore, white doesn't exist anymore. Everyone
turns the agenda of the New World Order. They want to reduce any coherent cognitive intelligence. That's what the Google thought map is. They don't want thought maps on every single person to have lots of different colors. They want it all to be a nice shade of green. So everybody's personality is being analyzed by the Google thought map so that they can have complete totally monochrome culture.
I've taken some proactive measures. You know, I deleted my Facebook account about a year and a half ago because I just didn't want to be in it. I didn't want to disclose my inner thoughts, who I am, to the ether, if you will. I didn't want to do it, so I quit. You know, I mean, they treated me poorly, and I didn't want to put up with their nonsense, and so I left Facebook. And I've done the very best I can to avoid Google every place I can, but I keep bumping into situations where I have to get a Gmail account for this, that, or the other thing. But I've really gone out of my way to try to not use Google. I use IxQuick as a search engine because it's private. I don't know if there's any such thing as private, but at least I have the illusion that it's private. I don't want my searches. I went online a couple weeks ago and bought a pair of slippers, and now all I get is ads for other slippers. I've already bought the
pair. Yeah, well, that's it. But it's interesting that Google won't talk to Apple, and Apple products won't talk to Android products. Mm-hmm. But anyway, live long and prosper.
Well, Miles, thank you so much for joining us. We've got a tough road to hoe ahead of us, but we will get this done. And, folks, we can't afford to lose this race. It's the 75th yard line. We got 25 yards to go. It's time to dig in and get tough. Miles, thank you so much.
God bless.
Bye-bye.